This is Two Guys in a River. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
We're two lifelong friends who love fly fishing for trout. Our podcast is all about helping you catch more fish and deepening your love of the time you spend on the river. We are Two Guys in a River.
For the love of fly fishing.
We're back. Yes, Dave and I returned a few days ago from a four-day fly fishing trip to some of our favorite spots in Montana. We arrived there on a Monday, fished hard Tuesday through Friday, and returned. So we're going to do some rapid fire topics today. That's how this is going to go. I think we can do rapid fire, right, Dave?
Well, as rapid fire as we can do as two men in their late 50s. Or are we in our mid 50s?
Well, I'm pushing 59. Well, you are too, but I'm pushing it a little bit more closely than you are. So, yeah, we're late. We're late 50s. Yeah,
My older brother.
Yeah, just by a few months. About 4 months. Yep. But you were born. I was born in 61. You were born in 62. So you hold that over me, don't you?
Yeah. Man. That's why I probably think more like a Gen Xer than I do a baby boomer. Those 3 months.
Yeah, that's right. That made a big difference. Oh, man. Well, yeah, we did have a blast. And so, hey, let's jump right to our first topic. Here we go.
The first is the weather. It was actually a shock to end up in Bozeman on that Monday. We got in on Labor Day, and the high that day was 50 degrees. A day or two previously, I think it had been in the 90s. In fact, there were restrictions on the river about fishing. One of the creeks that we ended up fishing, they had restrictions that you could only fish until 2 p.m., 1 or 2 p.m. because of what they call the...
There it was contained. In fact, remember the day we arrived, there was just a lot of cloud cover over the Bridger, so you couldn't see it. But then the next day, there was nothing, no smoke visible. But that was a big deal. My family physician, when I lived there in Bozeman, he and his wife lost their house in that fire. So that was a big deal. I mean, the weather had made this dramatic shift, and that's a good thing. But it also meant that we started off in much cooler temperatures than we anticipated.
The temperature drop threw me off. Even though I brought layers, I dressed too warmly for our first full day. We fished the Yellowstone on Tuesday, and I was peeling stuff off right away. And I had, you know, I had my fanny pack, I had my vest, and it was like I had no place to put the layers. And so the weather did throw me off a little bit. And there was snow in the mountains, and in fact, there was snow at some pretty low levels. And I was surprised at how far the snow level was. In fact, when the clouds lifted on Tuesday, it was so gorgeous. Oh my gosh, the foothills had a coating of snow on it, and then obviously the high mountains did as well. It was really beautiful.
A couple inches in the valley in Paradise Valley, but when we went up to hunt elk that morning, I mean, we were in like a foot of snow. This is on Labor Day. Yeah. So, I mean, the weather that time of year, it's always an adventure. Yeah, I think by day two, the high was 63. And then the last 2 days we were there, it was highs in the mid to high 70s. So it was just perfect. But, yeah, kind of a crazy start. All right. So, that's as rapid as we can be. On to the next topic, the surprises. We had some surprises. One of the surprises that was not good was when we got into Yellowstone National Park, we
closed with only 2 miles to go. And so we were thinking we were going to spend two of the days fishing that whole Tower Fall area. And we were lost for a little bit. So it took us a while to kind of double clutch and to go, okay. And so we fished the Yellowstone in a different section that day. And we didn't do well. I didn't have a fish rise to anything. We fished both streamers, nymphs, and actually I didn't throw any dries. It was all, I mean, the water was so fast. It was really rugged walking. Actually, that day I fell and I damaged my reel. And I wouldn't have been able to fish except I found a rock. I had this tool that I forgot to put in my vest, but I found a rock and over the course of about 15 minutes of work, I got the reel to be unstuck again. I was able to fish the rest of the day. It was tough fishing. So that first day, Tuesday, learning that we couldn't fish at Tower Junction, the rest of the week turned out really well. But that first day was tough. I don't think you and I caught any fish, did we?
No, you did in the afternoon. We went to another spot.
Oh, that's right.
A smaller stream, kind of the headwaters of one of the rivers we like to fish. And yeah, you caught some on
Dries.
terrestrials or dries. Yeah, and I was trying to fish streamers, and I wasn't doing anything. But that was so. That was kind of the downer surprise. I'd say though, the last day, Dave, we had a good surprise, right?
We did. We fished the boulder that day. We went all the way up where where the fly fisher drowned him. That's a terrible way to explain where we fished. Above the camp, there's a camp up there, and we fished for a while. Steve, I think you got a couple rises to a fly that you were fishing, a dry fly, but that was it. And so we thought, you know what? It's our last day. Let's not waste any more time. Let's go farther down into the valley. And so we found this access point and fished downstream, actually, because there was a fly fisher and his wife moving upstream. They had just arrived before we did. And we started to fish terrestrials. So we were fishing hoppers and ants. I was fishing also. I had a dropper at basically a Chernobyl on the top fly. And I alternated between that and a hopper, and then I dropped an ant. So we caught some fish on hoppers and also on some other dries, and it really was a great afternoon. So that was a nice little surprise. When you fish hoppers in September, it's always hit and miss, right? Or hit or miss, because you just don't know. Even, huh?
Actually, they built the shell. They didn't, from what I understand, they didn't finish the inside of it. But yeah, that's that whole valley. So yeah, you think about it. We were fishing just above where they filmed a little bit of a river runs through it in the morning, Redford, and then we were fishing in the afternoon where he filmed some of the Horse Whisperer. And of course,
Huh.
that was not our intention. But I just thought of that. It's funny. You reflect on these things. I think in the moment I was just wanting to fish and catch fish, but now that I look back, that was kind of cool. All right, so
Just one more thing. I think, and this just hits me, one of the things I love about our trips is that they are not 3 day, 4 day trips with a guide, and nothing against that at all. And certainly those who do that should do that if they can afford to do that. But what's nice is that we get to fish different rivers, and we get to pivot and do if things aren't working, and you get to know rivers. And so over the course of 35 years, I think you and I said that you and I first fished together, fished Tower Fall in 1987. I was out, I think, for a wedding. I was in the middle of graduate school. I dropped out. I was in Denver. I moved back to Bismarck, North Dakota, where my parents lived. I lived with them for 8 months, and I think I came out that summer. And I remember having a really, really great afternoon or evening. And I think your brother was there too, Dave Mathewson. And we
I think
caught fish
so, yeah.
they were woolly buggers.
Yeah, Wow.
So I love this idea of just the flexibility. And you mentioned we didn't do well in the morning, so we went further down the river, or we were upstream, then we went downstream. Even on the day that we couldn't fish Tower Fall, we found another great river and or another place to fish at least. So I really love the idea of maybe I'm saying I really love the idea of do-it-yourself fly fishing, and there's something wonderful about it.
There really is, and I think this was a year too because of the pandemic that we just didn't plan to see anybody. We just didn't think it was fair to them, and one of our buddies that we were going to fly fish with, things didn't work out for him that day. So actually, we didn't have much of a schedule this time. That was nice with some flexibility. Well, moving on to the next topic, we don't always have this category to talk about, but we definitely do on this trip. And I'm calling this the most moving moment. And I'm going to let Dave describe this. This is kind of a tender moment on our trip.
We decided this year we're going to try the Stillwater. And some of you who live out there know the Stillwater. It's a river that flows into the Yellowstone. It's east of Big Timber. You drive as if you're driving to Billings, Montana. You get off at Columbus, and then you go south, like you're going to Red Lodge. That's right. But then you take a right-hand turn. You go up this valley to a town called Nye, N-Y-E. It's not really, it's not really a town. It's two buildings. But there's also a church in the valley. It's one of the most beautiful valleys I've ever seen.
Oh my, yeah.
And there's a mine up there. It's called the Stillwater Mine. A friend of mine has worked there for years and years and years. And I went to high school with him. I went to high school with him and his wife, Julie. In fact, I knew Julie before Carson knew Julie. I knew Julie, I think, from the time I was like 10 years old. And her mom and dad and my mom and dad are really close friends. Even today, they're all in their mid-80s and still alive. So I've known Julie since, many, many years. Well, Julie passed away about 4 years in the Stillwater. I'm not sure it's someplace we'd ever go back to again, but we might. But it's beautiful water, beautiful valley, and there's only one way in the valley and one way out.
I'm so glad that we stopped at that cemetery. It kind of reminds me, my grandparents are buried in the Short Hill Cemetery in Paradise Valley. It's just, up on a hillside in kind of the side of a mountain. In fact, I shot an elk up there with a bow 1 year. There's something about those cemeteries that, they're such a beautiful place. And I think just the juxtaposition of the life that you see around you and then the reminder of death, that was really a moving time. Well, a little bit lighter topic, kind of doing our rapid fire thing today, although it's fire. I don't know if it's rapid or not, but let's talk about the food and the accommodations. So I'll start with the accommodations. We often stay with friends when we're out in the Bozeman area, but because of the pandemic, we didn't feel like we should put anybody out, so we stayed in Livingston, kind of centrally located. Dave found a great hotel for about $75 a night, and we only booked it for one night because it's like, we can control the eating.
Well,
some ways.
Some ways you control the eating.
Yeah, that's right.
So we went back and we went to some of our favorite places, and we won't say any names, those that weren't as good, but it was clear that two of the places that we love to go to had been sold because they did not have the same kind of sophistication to the menu, the taste, the service. And it confirmed it. In one of them, I asked the server, because at the end of the meal, I'm thinking, man, this is not the same as a year ago or 2 years ago when we were here. And so I just off the cuff said, hey, has this restaurant been sold in the last year? He goes, yeah. I thought, boy, classic. Yeah, the owners that came just simply couldn't replicate the care and the crafting and the vision that the original owners had. And man, it was clear. And the prices were the same or higher. So, yeah. I mean, I can say that I probably would never go back to both of those places.
It's just like fly fishing, isn't it? You find this great run and it's good for 4 years or 5 years and then kind of tapers off a little bit.
It silts out or something.
But hey, we did find a couple of really good places. One of them, if you're ever in Livingston, you've got to visit the Crust and Crumb Bakery. I think it's been open about 4 years. It's in a little, kind of a little mall, if you want to call it that.
Like a strip mall almost.
Yeah, and then Yellowstone Sports. But man, we ate there 4 out of 5 days. We would have eaten there the fifth day, but we had to get up really early to get on some water early. So man, but the food was just terrific. And that was one good place.
Well, they had great scones. They had great caramel rolls. I had oatmeal almost every day that I was there. The oatmeal was just good. I mean, you're thinking, can you really do oatmeal well? And you're like, yes, they had this blueberry oatmeal and strawberry oatmeal. I'm thinking, my gosh, this thing, even the oatmeal tastes great. The coffee was great. Definitely you can tell family-owned, crafted, the original recipes. I really enjoyed it. They have I heard someone on Facebook said, "Oh yeah, Dave, did you try the pies?" Apparently, they have good pies there as well. So, really, really good food at the what's it called? The Crust and Crumb Bakery.
Yeah, Crust and Crumb Bakery. Yeah, and then wow, we ate at the Grand Hotel in Big Timber twice, and boy, that was really good, wasn't it?
Boy, it really was. And it's expensive, but I have to tell you, there's value there. And it was there that Steve risked and had the, what do they call it? The Huckleberry lemonade, but the virgin Huckleberry lemonade, no alcohol or tequila in the lemonade. But
Yeah, I left out the vodka.
you left out the vodka. I was
Yeah.
going to have that with the vodka. I had a couple beers instead, but that meal, two meals there, which is unusual for us to eat in the same place twice, it was just fabulous. And the other place I think we would recommend is
That I ordered a virgin huckleberry smoothie, and I said, absolutely not. I'm not that stupid, but they just insist that I did. I said, no, I ordered a virgin huckleberry daiquiri. I know the difference. Yeah, I know that you don't have to worry about smoothies. So anyway, but yeah, Santa Fe Reds is good. It's just it's right there on the exit at 7th, and been there for a long time. I think the food is still really good.
I think the chips are unbelievable. We had fished all day hard, and coming in, I was so hungry. I had not eaten much. I had maybe 200 or 300 calories that day coming into dinner. And oh my gosh, I was so
Well,
hungry.
I sent my wife, Priscilla, a picture of those chips, and it was the only time on the trip that I got this angry face emoji back because she loves those chips. Those are still her favorite. I should have brought some back to her, but they probably would have been crushed. All right. Well, rapid fire. What's the next topic, Dave?
Next topic is our conversations on the trip, and that's what always makes these trips special. We get to talk on a deeper level. I mean, honestly, on a lot of these trips, we don't even talk to each other. We're just silent in the car. Steve's driving and on his phone.
Didn't expect to talk about that stuff today. It's not really fly fishing, but yeah, about 18 years ago, well, 20 years ago, I wrote a book. It was published 18 years ago. This is for biblical scholars, for pastors. It's on preaching, teaching the stories, the narratives in the Old Testament part of the Bible. Those who are familiar with the Bible. And so the publisher actually wanted a second edition. It's believe me, this is not selling like a Tom Clancy novel or Leafhanger, or I don't know who are the popular writers today, but it's just been a steady text in ancient languages. My focus is biblical Hebrew. That's what part of the Bible, the Old Testament part, was written in, and so I'm working on that. It's I'm working with a fine, well-known Old Testament scholar at University of Stellenbosch in South Africa. And one of the reasons I like working there is not only is he one of the best, I mean, he's just a leader in the field, but and he's great to work with, but they have a European model. Here in the States, if you do a PhD, you're doing a couple years of classwork and then a dissertation. But if you go to the UK, if you go to Europe, I mean, friends of mine that have gone to Cambridge or Oxford, you don't take classes, you write a dissertation, and that's what it is. So that's what this is. And I'm doing this part time, so I'm 5 years into it, and will be finished, have to be finished by next by September of 2021. So that's just one of those things. It's sort of my torturous form of continued learning and education. But I think too, as I get older, may open up some opportunities for continued writing and teaching. I'm a pastor. That's where I want to stay. But this will allow me to do some other things. So yeah, that's maybe why I need to fly fish after I bury myself in that for a while. It's just that's the thing we've talked about. We talked about this too. Part of our conversation was how when we're fly fishing, we're so focused on what we're doing that we're not thinking about anything else. And there's very few other things in my life that do that. Back when I used to hunt elk, there were moments, you know, where you're calling and you're getting answers from a bull and you're sneaking in on them and they're all, and, yeah, what are some of the things that you shared? I thought were kind of interesting.
We have such different lives, and our kids, for starters, are in such different phases of life. You have 7 grandchildren. I have no grandchildren. I have no kids that are even married. And my oldest kid is two years younger than your youngest child. So even though we're the same age, in some sense, we live in completely different worlds. And so my oldest first job this year, my daughter Kira, who's 22, she's having a first year. So I have a 24-year-old, 22-year-old. We're moving her to Nashville and get this other one going. So that's how I see the next 10 years unfolding. Who knows? I mean, it could all end tomorrow. COVID yeah. certainly was a good reminder that that all planning is tied to the black swan in some ways. The black swan event.
Oh man.
So
yeah. Wow. Well, we really did have some good conversations, and that's a huge part of taking a trip and taking it with somebody that's a good friend. And man, we, you know, we're all about the fly fishing, but we always have great conversations. All right, our next topic. Oh man, I don't know if I want to go here, but it's on the script, so yeah, this is not so great moments.
So this year you were the source of pretty much all of those great moments. Usually I am the source of these moments.
I know. I can't believe it. That's why I'm a little hesitant. Well, okay. So here we go. One of these had to do with my reel. So, I mean, this was an ongoing drama every day. So the first day I forgot it. I forgot my reel. Well, I forgot the main reel I have. Thankfully, I had a reel with sink tip line. Yeah, we were fishing the Yellowstone River, and that's actually a good place, I guess, to use a sink tip with a streamer. But I just don't like to use a sink tip unless I'm somewhere where it's just really deep, like the Missouri below Hauser Dam or something. But anyway, so I had to do that. And then later, remember, I borrowed your reel with 3-weight on it that you used for Euro nymphing. I did that just so I could fish some dries. So thankfully, the second day, I remembered it, but I fell and I dinged my reel the second day. And then, thankfully, a little bit of because of your exchange, gave you, I think I handed you my rod, so you had to grab like the upper third of it. Well, what that meant is it, what, swung, that the reel is heavier, so it swings down, ding, against the rock. And this time there was not much we could do about straightening the thing out.
Yeah. So I was at fault.
Responsibility. Yeah.
Well, but I was at fault. It's just that when you handed me the rod, if I would have not allowed that, if I would have tried not to allow the reel to drop, the back of the rod, I would have snapped your Winston.
Yeah, so you made a good choice. So I guess based on that, I won't ask you to contribute towards my new reel. Now, Dave, you remember the old expression, every cloud has its silver lining?
Yep, sure do.
Well, there was a silver lining in this, and that is I got to buy a new reel. I went into a fly shop and, you know, said, hey, here's how much I've got to spend. And I had been wanting something a little more stout. I really liked that reel. It was a good, I won't mention the brand because it's a good brand, but it was just a cheaper reel. And I honestly, I'd spent about $150. I said, I can spend between $250 and $300. I'd like something that might be a little sturdier. And the guy gave me a couple of options. The cheapest, but the one that I liked that felt best, was a Galvan. And I've never used those. A Galvan, G-A-L-V-A-N. Turns out that Bonificio Galvan was a machinist in the Sierras in Northern California. And years, maybe 25, 30 years ago, he he did something to his reel. He wanted to go get one, and a decent one, and he was kind of shocked at the prices. So being a machinist, he started, he made his own reel, and one thing led to another. And so I really like this Galvin. So not so great moments. And yes, I was the source of every one of those. Let the record show.
So was that, did you do that on Friday or on Saturday?
That was on Saturday. Yeah.
I was thinking maybe you did that on Friday, because Thursday when we fished that creek where you broke your reel, that was a tough day of fishing. We caught a ton of fish, but we fished as hard, I think, as we have fished probably since the last time we fished that creek. There, as you said, there just is no way up the canyon but in the river. And the river is full of these boulders. And if you're up 2.5 miles and you start to walk back, you don't know how hard it is to walk downstream where you can't see things. And it was a tough walk back, and I was exhausted. So I thought maybe that was Friday, because that would have made complete sense to me, because man, our legs were buzzing on those after that day on Thursday.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I guess though, when you don't look and notice that there's a hose that's dangling about 18 inches off the ground.
Well, let's go to the aha moments, right? So yeah. I don't know if these are all aha moments, but the one thing that always ahas me when I go to Montana these days is how crowded Southwest Montana and Yellowstone National Park was, even after Labor Day. And yeah. I remember fishing it, you know, years ago, where once Labor Day hit, you were pretty much alone in the park. Now, that's a complete overstatement. But today, it is as if it were, you know, the second week of August. And it's discouraging, actually, if you like the outdoors and you want to be alone. Maybe it was because of COVID and people, more local people did trips. I don't know, but it was packed. And it's discouraging, honestly, because Yellowstone National Park is one of our favorite places in the world, and yet it's not going to get less busy over the next 10 years. It's only going to get more crowded, which will force us out and force us to find more remote places to fish. But it's beautiful country, but it is packed. And those of you who are considering going out there and want to fish seriously need to think about going during alternative times. And I know that the prolific hatches and the hoppers are great, you know, the first couple weeks of August. But I'm telling you, even when we were there, which is this full second week of September, it was just packed.
And you just have to work harder. But maybe this next aha moment is the encouragement. There are still remote places. I mean, that first day we fished, and, you know, Tower Junction, the road was closed there. We fished the Yellowstone some, but had a difficult time finding water that was as fishable as we hoped, and that was just more due to you know, sections that we tried were kind of rugged in the canyon section and water moving fast. So we decided to go up near Indian Creek Campground up above Mammoth Hot Springs, and we actually fished the Gardner River, probably not terribly far from its headwaters, although it might have been a couple miles or more that we would have had to walk. But we fished a pretty remote stretch of it. And I think, again, I was just struck by how vast that country was. I mean, it just, you could see, you know, you could see for what, 3, 4, 5 miles of just open rolling sagebrush kind of hills that led to the base of some mountains. And I mean, it was just stunning. It's like, hard to believe that there are places like this where you can just stand out there, not see, not hear anything for miles. So that was actually really cool.
It was vast. And where we hiked away from the road, and we were out 2, 3 miles, and it was really, really amazing country. And it's aha in that, aha, there's still places like this in Yellowstone, even after the aha, it's crowded. And it's still a wonderful thing. And I think it should just motivate all of us to stay in shape, make sure we walk the extra mile, get out there, because There's still some really beautiful, beautiful country out there.
Yeah, there are. And once again, we got to hear a big old herd bull bugling and elk bugling near Mammoth Hot Springs. And boy, every time I hear that sound, it just takes me back to the days when I hunted about 35 miles north of the park up in Paradise Valley, and had elk going like that. So that was cool as well.
Well, we should talk about the fishing, don't you think? Maybe that's our next rapid fire
Yeah,
topic.
that's right. We've kind of alluded to this, I guess, a little bit, but yeah, let's just spell it out.
Well, day one, there was not a lot caught. I caught three or four small brook trout. Actually, they were rainbows. Small rainbows on the Gardner where we went up, and I was fishing dry. Steve was, you were really not fishing. You were just using streamers. It was a small creek. But it was so fun to fish because it was a beautiful meadow with sagebrush, but also a lot of grass. And it actually reminded me a little bit of some of the creeks in the Driftless. Not with the
Yeah.
vastness, but the creek itself. And some beautiful little runs. The fish were really small and they weren't big, but it was really, really enjoyable just to be able to have those long casts and but where you were casting, that made it great. So first day, not a lot of fish, three or four really small fish. That was it.
Yeah. And then day two, like you said, we hit the Stillwater. We fished a section that just gorgeous, beautiful runs, but our senses probably more pressure there, and they just were not hitting. But then when we went up kind of to the end of the road, there's a gorgeous national forest campground, and we fished some water, a lot of boulders, some deep runs. And yeah, that's where I, on a streamer, on a just a woolly bugger, caught a huge like a 17 inch brown that was just fatter than all getting, and he was going to go with us, but it didn't work out. So it's just the two of us, just Dave and me, and we figured out there was nobody else on it the whole day. And man, did we catch fish! And they were all, 15 to 18 inch rainbow and brown. And I don't know that we caught a cutthroat that day, but
No,
oh, they were
uh-uh.
just. But we caught a pile of fish, and that was they were all on streamers. Like you said, it's a tough hike back down. We did fish some on the way back, but at the end of the day, you're exhausted, but it was worth it with all the fish. So I'd say we had one day that was just stellar. And I think we dream about having 4 days like that, but in all the years we've done it, we've had some. I remember one trip where we had three terrific days. That's just
Yeah,
rare.
that is so
Out of
rare.
4 days, it is. We've had several trips where we've had two really good days, but I'd say this was one of the few trips where we only had one really good day. But that's fine. That was enough. And so that's day three. How about day four?
Day four was our last day, full day of fishing. As we mentioned, we fished the boulder and really a great afternoon on hoppers. We fished a new section of the boulder, had never fished it. Great runs. The one thing the boulder has in the valley is some really, really great fun runs. Now you have to walk sometimes between the runs, and the way we fish, we don't spend a lot of time at each run, but there are some nymphing runs. You and I didn't spend a lot of time nymph fishing. In fact, I don't know that you did
Now,
anything. I did put a dropper and I caught a couple rainbows on that, but I fished the terrestrials and caught some fish and specifically the hopper. And but it won the country is unbelievably beautiful. The
yeah.
runs are just fabulous. I would like to go
Yep.
back there and nymph fish that, really get serious about nymph fishing,
Yeah.
because it's some beautiful, beautiful runs for traditional nymph fishing. They may not be as good for Euro nymphing, but for traditional nymph fishing. We also caught a couple whitefish that day, remember? I think I
Yeah,
caught
that's right.
two whitefish, yeah.
I think I did as well. Kind of big whitefish.
Big whitefish, yeah.
I thought when we were fishing, I thought, man, if we would have been here a couple of hours early, I think we would have had 3.5, 4 solid hours of of a pretty steady hopper terrestrial action. But hey, now we know, and that's always part of it.
Yeah. part of the
I'm just
learning.
glad I'm just glad that we while relaxing, we realize that we just aren't as young as we used to be. Man, we resonate with that, Roger. That's us too.
What's that country western song? I'm as good once. I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was, or something like that.
Yeah. Hey, that works.
I do think both of us are in pretty good shape. I mean, I consider mm-hmm. myself being in pretty good shape. I'm not in marathon shape.
Right. Yeah.
But
maybe a little bit longer, and the need for recovery is more noticeable, right? And that's where our friend Roger's right. You know, take a break. You know, we often do a hard day, then an easier day, then a hard day. And I think the way it worked out this year, that kind of happened because we were fishing some new water. We might have done a little bit more driving on a couple of those days. Not only we fished hard, but, you know, if we spent 2 or 3 hours and it wasn't good, then we'd drive to another spot on that river. And, of course, that's recovery time when you're driving instead of walking. So, yeah, we totally echo what Roger said. Well, that's going to do it for today. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
Until next time, we are two guys in a river.
For the love of fly fishing.